Cheers. Yeah, that's okay. But Brian Todd is a pastor in Burlington, New Jersey, at Burlington Church of the Nazarene. He was at our poverty forum we did this summer. He's been a friend of mine for a while. His wife mocks me when I play basketball. So if you ever play basketball and she's there, she'll taunt you. Brian's been a good friend. He's been kind of a mentor to me and into our community, and so I'm excited to have him here. So.
Happy New Year. So I have a New Year's resolution for us all. It's just an easy one. Be holy just like God's holy. What do you think? Like, forget losing weight or exercising. Let's just go straight to the top. Now, I'm from a denomination or a tradition that seems to emphasize holiness. Like, some church might be social justice, other churches might be evangelism. For some reason, ours picked holiness, but it became, the word holy really became rules. So when I hear about be holy as God was holy, my first idea would be what? I'm going to have to go obey all the rules that God said because he's like the ultimate rule person. And so to me, holiness often feels like this. So I could give you a statement of what I think it means. I could interpret all kinds of text. I could give you probably quite a few list of rules of what it means to be holy. But then when I go home, it reminds me of my math teacher who gave me really complicated problems that made sense in class. But then when you go to do your homework, what happens? So then it doesn't make sense. So I want to know what holiness means at this time. I'm kind of an on-time person. So if I'm going to show up at the 10 o'clock meeting, that means I'm going to be there probably about 10 minutes early. Where my wife seems to think that the time we leave the house for the 10 o'clock meeting is 10 o'clock. So we're like really 15 minutes late, even though nobody even cares that we show up. So as I'm frustrated, you know, with her and frustrated with my family and all that stuff, I just want to get mad and just rip into it and then actually ruin the whole day because they're late. And then all of a sudden in my mind is a whisper, as it is written, be holy as I am holy. Well, that stinks. So what's it like if you're like me and you're always married to somebody that's late? Or you families like that. What's it like to be holy when they're running late? Or what's it like to be on the other side when you've been late and now you've been chastised and scolded and been told you've been late again and you ruin their whole day? What's it like to be holy there? So we're already running late. And now we pull up to the yield sign that somebody stopped at, which to me should be a federal offense. Right? And I'm mad. I'm ready to honk. I'm ready to ride up beside them, probably cut them off on the freeway to let them know that they broke a federal law. And then all of a sudden the voice comes in, right? As it's written. Be holy as I'm holy. Well, hey, I know, man, I'm not supposed to do this, do this, do this. But what's it look like at the yield sign that somebody stopped at? What's it like to be married to the person ready to honk at the person who stopped at the yield sign, or to be the person who, for some reason, you stopped at the yield sign and now you're getting honked at? Be holy as I'm holy. What's it look like there? So we're already running late. We got idiots on the road that don't know how to read the signs, and we show up at the family function. As it is written. What's it look like at a Christmas thing with your extended family when they just assume you have the same political stances as they do? Be holy as I am holy. Or when they're like bratty kids, don't listen, and they opened your presents. As it is written. That's what I'm interested in. Real life holiness. Not the statements that I had to say to get ordained. I understand all that stuff. But what's it look like in everyday life? So it's the day after Christmas. We spent money we don't have on gifts my kids don't need. And December 26th, around 2 in the afternoon, they say this. Daddy, I'm bored. Bored? You got Toys R Us all over the house. And I like to give them the lecture that I vowed I'd never give them, when the ones my dad gave me. And that's what I'm interested in. Because I feel like my stances on holiness don't always match up with those things. And so I like to unpackage that a little bit and wrestle with these ideas with you and talk about, I don't know, maybe in real life ways what it might look like to be a holiness people, a people trying and striving to be holy in real life ways. So here's the passage. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it's written, be holy as I'm holy. Anybody like Cool Ranch Doritos? It's been my favorite snack since they came out. And so in my house, Cool Ranch Doritos are called out. There's a jealous God of the Cool Ranch Doritos. So if you come and touch my Doritos, they've been sanctified as holy in my house. They're separate. They're called out. They're for my use. Don't touch them. And so God sees his church like Cool Ranch Doritos, crumbled up a little bit, three layers of cheese in the microwave for 32 seconds. Called out, my special treat. You're called out. You've been invited to be separate of a jealous God who says, that's mine. Don't touch it. That's mine. Don't touch it. Holiness is just, it's not so much about rules as being set apart for something very special. But as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. Now this twist here on this idea to me is open my eyes to Scripture in a new way, being a Christian maybe even in new ways, but definitely the idea of being holy. When we interpret Scripture most of the time and come up with the you statement, we take it to be personal. So I have to work on my personal disciplines and my personal prayer life, my personal habits and my personal gifts, and we've made you singular so that I have to turn me into Jesus. But in the New Testament, almost all the yous are actually plural. And almost all the books in the New Testament are written to a whole church. So instead of God saying, you, Brian, have to look like Jesus, he might be saying that the whole church, when you're mingled together, makes the complete picture of Jesus, and that it's not up to me to look like Jesus all by myself, but that I need other people, and that the mix of resources and the mix of talents and gifts and ideas and takes and all those things together make the full picture. And I've often felt that this idea of me focusing on my own being holy or being whatever often ends up in failure. And I blame myself on it. But I think the reason that it's been weird to me is that I've tried to do it by myself. And so that I come as a collection of individuals in a church where all of us are working on holiness. Well, maybe God's saying, no, it takes everybody to complete this picture of the body of Christ, not just each individual person who hopefully makes up the picture of the puzzle. And so not just to be like a word nerd or anything, but what would it look like in my life and in my practice, in my church, in my community, if I looked at all the passages that say you go do something as a plural and not just a singular command to me by myself? How would that change? How might that set people free? How might we be more complimenting of each other to figure out what this picture of Christ looks like than just this individual thing that I got to work real hard at making myself more like Christ? So just as you have been called out, just as y'all been called out, been separate, been invited into being God's special treat, just as he has called you is holy, it's a whole group thing, it's a community effort. Just as he who's called you is holy. That's a picture of my van. And the idea here is that holy in the Bible is really supposed to mean you've been called out and separate to be returned into the image you've been created to in the first place. To be perfected, the Bible says. Not to be perfect and not make mistakes, but to be returned to your intentional purpose and use. Now, my van has been perfect. We've had to, you know, fix the brakes and the normal things that you would with a van that's got years and mileage on it. It's never broken down. It's been perfect for us. It gets us to soccer games, gets us to grocery. We went from 4 car seats down to 2. We're almost done with all that stuff. It's been perfect. But let's say I decided, because it is perfect, I'm going to run it in the Daytona 500. So I got my van up to like 95 miles an hour, shaking all the way around that thing for 500 miles. What place do you think I came in? I came in last place by 4 days. But my van ran perfectly. So what was wrong with it? I was running it in something it was not designed to run in. So it wasn't that it failed as much as I was trying to do it in a place that it wasn't designed, but it's perfect in its other areas. So the challenge is, to me, is what if God's called us out
to be returned back to the intended use, and that's what it means to be holy and perfected. Not for us to run in the Daytona 500, not for us to be the next whoever, not for you to be me and me to be you, but us together somehow being used to run perfectly in the venue, in the community, in the gifts, in the ministries that he's called us to do, as opposed to holy being just living out a list of rules or a list of habits or a list of stuff that somebody else from a different time era came up with. And that in that we can actually be, as the Bible says, be perfected and be holy as Christ, simply because we can do the things that Christ has created us for and called us to. Holiness is to be made complete, as you were intended to be. So just as he who called you is holy, so be holy. That's a picture of a voice print. So everybody's got a fingerprint. We all have DNA. We all have a voice print that's unique to us. And in the New Testament, in the language that it was written, the verbs have a voice print. So our verbs have tenses. We have past tense, present tense, and future tense. But their verbs have a voice. So there's a couple of them, but one voice is called an active one, and the other is called the passive one. And this, to me, is another thing that's really changed my view of lots of stuff in the Bible, is that we interpret these verbs to be active voices that tell us to go do something, when the reality, that word is in the passive voice, which means it's God's voice saying that's what he's going to do. So instead of it being this challenge, Brian, you have to go do holy. You have to go work on all these things. God's saying, I'm going to make you holy. Receive it. It's a passive voice. It's a passive verb, and I wonder how many of us have strived and tried. We've made New Year's resolutions, and we're going to go work and work and work. But the reality is we're just a cup, a vessel, where God's trying to pour this thing into us. Not just as individuals, but as a whole group, separate and called out to be his treat. Man, that's so much different than the version of holiness I've been taught that I almost feel blasphemous saying it like that. To be God's treat with a group of people with the purpose of making ourselves complete to look more like Christ, whatever that might look like in my neighborhood. Another thing these verbs have is called a mood. So it's in God's voice, but the mood is a command. It's not a suggestion. It's not a greeting. It's not, hey, think about this. It's a command that says, receive me. Receive my holiness so I can make you holy. How does that sit with you? To think through this idea that being holy is simply receiving something that will then flow out of us, as opposed to an unbelievably high standard that is actually impossible for any individual or group to meet. So why bother? Just as he called us together to be holy, so receive holy. Be holy in all that you do. Lots of times I think our emphasis is to be holy from stuff, from addictions, from bad habits, from cultural taboos. So the emphasis is to keep staying away from things. And the Bible speaks to that. But if we really pay attention to how much Christ and the other writers speak about this, there's not as much emphasis to be holy from stuff as there is holy to stuff. And I don't think it erases it or makes it no good. As much as I think he's saying, you guys, I've called you out to be my treat. And I like to fill myself with you so that you can be freed from stuff and bad habits and junk and sin and all those things. But if that's where we stop, what we're making the means the end. We're stopping way short, and we'll spend the rest of our life trying to be free from stuff, where is being holy more about being holy to be an agent of holiness and an agent of change. in the community, in the neighborhood, in the family, the job that we live in? And is there somehow, some way that he does that with us together, not just a collection of individuals, but as one body? So just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do, for it's written, be holy. Practice holy. It's a process of holy. Practice? You know about practice? No matter how talented an individual, they can't win at a team sport. Off the charts talent. Probably doesn't need to practice. How he does what he does, I have no clue. The reason practice would be important for a basketball player isn't so much just personal habits, but to be able to do something as a team. And so are the things that we need to practice at to be complete together that sometimes are boring? Musicians, do you love it when people say, oh, I wish I could play with like you do? And don't you feel like saying, well, I wish you would practice like I do, then we could play together. How many hours does anybody put into practicing and rehearsing? Boring stuff. I mean, most people quit before they make it out of scales because they wanted to play Beethoven or they wanted to play their favorite whatever, and they never even made it out of Do, Re, Mi. This is boring. And how many things are there about being a Christian, about being holy, about being a church that are just flat out boring practices, but that are the very things that help us be complete, but also help us to actually hear and discern God's voice at the yield sign, at the family Christmas thing and all those, because if we don't practice it here, we're not going to hear it there. What if prayer is more about learning what God's voice sounds like so I can listen to it in my day than me sitting around telling him so he has a really clear understanding what my voice sounds like? What do you think? Had a dog and I trained him. And he was actually a very obedient dog. He got to the point we could take a walk anywhere and without a leash, and he would just stay by my side. And if he got a little bit off, I'd just click like that, and he would just come right back to my side. Whether there was trash, whether there was birds, he was a Labrador retriever, and he got to the point without a leash, he wouldn't chase birds in the pond. Now, that's miraculous. So we started at my house and without any distractions, and he did pretty good. But then when we got into the yard, all of a sudden birds and other animals and all kinds of sniffs made it really, really hard. So we had to train him with a little bit of distractions so that when we got out and took a walk, he would be able to just hear my little voice, my little nudge, so he would actually follow me and we could be a team walking around without a leash. Took a few yanks, a few kicks, lots of treats, until he finally was able to just recognize my commands without hardly any prompting. And I wonder if it's the same for us, where early on we spend lots of time praying, and then all of a sudden it doesn't seem to matter as much because we're not hearing from him like we used to, or we're not getting answers like we used to. And maybe that's God's way of saying, hey, it's time to move outside with a little more distractions so you can hear my voice not only in prayer times and in church times, but in the distractions of everyday life. And eventually, with lots of practice as a group, we can actually as a group discern God's moving and God's directions with very little prompting and very little yanks on our throats so we actually obey. What do you think of that? It takes lots of practice. But we read the books, we read the stories, we hear people's testimonies, and we want it to happen today. Maybe yesterday. And get frustrated because it actually takes several years. As an individual, what's it like as a whole group? Practice. Being holy, literally, is simply the practice or the process of being made complete. So here's an idea of how I think this thing works out in a very silly story about a serious topic. So I think there's stages, and I think they overlap. With prompting from somebody else, I realize something about myself that I never noticed. Most of us live life with very little reflection and don't even know things about ourselves that are irritating, off, bad, whatever. You guys ever heard of the idea in conflict, you're either fight or flight? I'm fight. Can't help it, just the way I am. So I have one tool for all conflict, and it's a hammer, which makes every conflict, every person a what? A nail. So how do hammers fix nails. You just pound on it. Right? Wait, how do you think that works as a husband? It works great, I think. I don't know what the problem is. How's it work as a pastor? How's it work as a dad? How's it work as a friend? And so I never noticed this about myself. I just thought that, man, I was manning up and all the pansies just needed to deal with it. Right? I might be wrong. I'm never in doubt. Let's get it on. So I'm not saying we should never have a hammer, but there's lots of tools in the toolbox. And so someone outside of me, I would love to say it was God, it wasn't. Someone else outside of my mind, out of my heart, prompted me to help me realize, hey, Brian, you need more tools because you're really in the midst of trying to help people, actually banging them, hurting them, pounding on them. Never noticed it myself. So then all of a sudden, after I pounded on somebody, all by myself, I noticed, oops, I did it again. All kinds of bent nails all over the place, never noticed in my life. Now I'm noticing it, but it's after the fact. Wish I could say, hey, I noticed it on my own, but it took a while. After a little bit of time, it starts to get to where I'm starting to notice in the moment. Now, that doesn't mean in the moment I'm not going to hammer you. It just means in the moment I notice I have a choice to hammer or not to hammer. With me? So early on, what do you think I did? I noticed it, but I'm still swinging. I don't have another tool. You're bugging me. We need to deal with this. Bam, like that mole game. Problem. So after lots of in the moments and starting to choose more options than bang, get to the point where the norm for my life becomes a broader picture of dealing with conflict, including a hammer, but not as my only tool. And to me, that is a picture of this idea of being made complete as a person, that it just takes a long time. I would love to hit the spontaneous the moment I pray. I wish God would just make a switch that says, hey, I've chosen to obey you for the rest of my life. Switch off my choice so I could just automatically obey. And unfortunately, he doesn't do that. So I have a story for you about this process. It's not biographical or autobiographical. It's not, hopefully, anybody's exact story. However, if the shoe fits, might be a blessing. So this, to me, would be a silly parable on what this could look like lived out in someone's life. I'd like to introduce you to this test dummy, Jerkface. He never knew that pouting, when he didn't get his way, was not a good thing. That's what he did as a kid, and it seemed to work. In fact, it helped him to always get his way. So I suppose by now you would know that's how he earned his nickname. So one day, he's wondering why he doesn't have any friends, and he prays to God, why am I such a jerk face? So he comes across the Bible that says something like this: be holy because I'm holy. So instantly he knows inside that this is what he wants, even though he doesn't even really understand it. And he prays to God, make me holy. And in spite of the fact, in spite of the fact that he doesn't know it, God answers his prayer. How do you think he answers that kind of prayer? He sends a friend along. And he says, you're a real jerk face. Every time you get your way, you pout, and I, for one, am sick of it. Have you ever had a prayer answered that way? So as usual, he goes and he pouts. And as was his norm in these types of things, Jerkface went and he pouted to another friend about the complaint of friend number one. In the church, we call that fellowship. So friend number two says this. I don't know how to say this, but friend number one's right. So though hurt and even more pouty, somehow Jerkface recognizes that his friend is correct and upon reflection thinks this. Hey, maybe this is what God wants to make me holy. I am a jerkface and I need to stop pouting. So he's now arrived at that first stage of the roadmap. Somebody prompted him and he recognized it. Took another person to team up with what God was doing. And those two friends helped him to recognize that that God was doing something in his life. So remember, he couldn't recognize it himself, but unlike any time before, the friend's prompting helped him to recognize this whole mess for the first time. If you prompted somebody who was a pouter, what's the general response? They're going to pout. If you were to prompt somebody who always gets angry, what do you think they're going to do with your prompt? They're going to get angry. If they're defensive, what are they going to do? And so how do we let people in our lives speak to the very things God's speaking to us about, and even being an answer to prayer as opposed to something that is a pain in the butt that makes us do the very thing we wish we weren't doing in the first place? Now, I'd love to tell you that he instantly became happy face, but I can't. Why? This guy's been a jerk face for over 25 years. And these kind of things just don't happen overnight. But he's on the move. And he keeps praying about it. He even asked his friends, "Hey friends, 1 and 2, I know I'm a real jerk face sometimes." They both nod, look at each other, and shrug. "Could you let me know when I do the jerk face thing? I don't recognize. I really need your help." They did. It was really annoying. But it helped him, and it even started to help friends 1 and 2 recognize their own tendencies towards being jerk faces in their own sort of way. That's probably closer to fellowship. And one day, miracle of all miracles, Jerkface noted on his own. He noticed on his own a time that he pouted. Didn't need his friends to help him out. So he's talking to another friend who disagreed with his take on politics, and then you guessed it. He pouted and he acted like a jerkface. But this time, though, 3 days after that, Jerkface remembered that he acted like a jerkface. So immediately, which was actually 3 more days, he called up his friend and he said, "Hey, this is Jerkface. Sorry, I acted like a jerkface the other day when we talked about politics." So thus, Jerkface, though it was 6 days later, recognized all by himself that this is the one area of life that God was working on, and he graduated to stage 2, the after the fact stage. He noticed it a little late on the draw, but he did notice it. So it's progress. It's not what I think of when I think of being made holy. It's not what I think of when I think of miraculous change and transformation and God's answer to prayer, but I think it's closer to real life. So I'd love to tell you that the transition from jerk face to happy face only takes a couple of days, but it's pretty complicated and generally takes years. Yes, I said years, with moments of victory and moments of failure. It takes years. I'd also love to stop and talk about why it takes years when God could just do it in a blink. I do. I believe he could just do it in a blink, but I actually don't know why. I think it's because it helps us to mature in our faith as opposed to becoming selfish little gimme-gimmies who are addicted to instant gratification, which isn't really any better than being a jerk face, but I'm not too sure on all that either. I do my own tangents. So 3 months, 3 years, 2 months, 6 days, 7 hours, and a second or two later, Jerkface is now to the point where he recognizes almost instantly his horrible need to pout so he can get his way, even though he knows that pouting is really being a jerkface. Could you imagine living your life, never having noticed something, and now you notice it all day, every day? What would that person feel like? Would you feel happy and joy? You see yourself now in ways you've never seen yourself. And it's part of the process of being made holy. It's part of being a mature Christian. It's part of being an adult. But man, now I see myself this way and I'd rather not see myself anymore. And so lots of us stop and quit here because it doesn't feel good anymore. It feels very lonely. It feels very shameful. It feels very embarrassing. But it's actually probably one of the healthiest things that we do. We're dangerous when we don't know our junk. We're contagious and we mess up other people. But once we start seeing the stuff, we can now then work on it. He doesn't like it. And he is sincerely remorseful every single time, which is now 32 times a day, double that if he has to hang out with his parents. So he prays to God, "Why are you not making me holy?" And God says, I am, but stop being a jerk face about it. Look at all the progress you've made. Instantly, Jerkface notices that he even pouts to God when he doesn't get his way. And is faced with a huge decision, he cries out, to pout or not to pout, that is the question. So then he pouts about his pouting. It's true. I get angry about my anger, get defensive about my defensiveness. Then I'll pout about my pouting. But as more time passes, Jerkface starts to recognize in the moment the pouting thing. Right in the middle of conversations, he can make the choice to pout or not to pout. And at first, he chooses to pout. He doesn't like it. In fact, he hates it. It's easier. And that's what he's always known. Works. It gets his way. Why would he want to stop? Works. And one day he says, what the heck? And he decides not to pout. Guess what? He liked it. It was weird. It's like living in a foreign country. His friends didn't know what to do when he said this. I know we disagree, but I think there's some right things and some wrong things about both of our viewpoints. So after their shock of his new attitude, everyone was resuscitated, and they celebrated Jerkface's newfound freedom. Is a person who is a chronic pouter being set free as miraculous as a drug addict who's been set free? What's the difference? I mean, obviously there's difference in consequences and differences in things, but at the end of the day, which one is miraculous? They both are. For the person who's always defensive, who can't lose an argument even when they're wrong and they know it. A person who fights in all conflicts or a person who flies in all conflicts and has been freed to that, to be part of a community making the whole community more complete. Just more miraculous. Now, I love to tell you that it was this way all the time, and it was this way with everyone, but it wasn't that easy. Jerkface was really good with his close friends, but when he hung out with his parents, they were jerk faces too. That's where he learned it. Which made the whole in the moment thing a little more difficult to master. Here's something that I have found. If people don't confront us on our jerkface tendencies, we end up just like one of our parents, and we marry somebody else just like the other parent. And we live the whole cycle all over again, giving birth to more jerk faces. So after more and more victories with his friends, Jerkface soon come to love his newfound choice to be happy face, even in the midst of conversations, even in disagreement. And he learned how to live in that paradox of being true to himself and still be a loving friend. Even at Christmas, Thanksgiving, when his spouse was running late, the kids are bored, when that idiot stopped at the yield sign, to where those things just weren't even a blip on the radar anymore. So without much notice or fanfare, the lifestyle actually became his habit. So what used to be a bad habit has now, over the course of many promptings a year or so after the facts, several months of bad choices in the moment, followed by some really good choices in the moment, is now a spontaneous happening that's rarely ever jerk-faced upon. So to me, that's a silly parable about a serious topic on what I think when God says, hey, be holy, what that story could kind of look like, or what the process could kind of look like. He doesn't even have to think about it anymore. In fact, the only thing he thinks about is this. Why did it take me so long to see that I was a jerk-face? And then God tapped him on the shoulder and said, I'd like to make your eating habits holy. And guess what? He didn't even pout about it. So just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it's written, be holy because I'm holy. That was a poster on my wall growing up. It was my favorite basketball player. You guys, some of you might remember the idea of the commercial to be like Mike. And so the idea, you know, hey, if I wear his shoes, I'm going to be like Mike. Well, it didn't really pan out that way. So say he picked me to go to his camp so I could learn from MJ about how to be like Mike. I got a little bit better, but how good did I really get? I mean, if I was that good, you would probably know my name by now. If somehow I could actually really be like Mike. So now he's saying, hey, Brian, I want you to be on my team. So now I'm going to play with Michael Jordan in the NBA and be on his team and win a couple championships. But did I ever really turn out like Michael Jordan? No, nobody has. Nobody did. And so when I read this passage, I feel like God's saying, hey, I'm better than Michael Jordan, and I want you to be like me because I'm me. And I think the passage reads a little bit different. Because I'm me, I can make you into me. So what if Michael Jordan says, I'm going to give you my Jordan-ness? I'm not going to teach you. I'm not going to play with you. I'm not going to coach you. I'm actually going to give you me. So then you can now be like Mike. That's a whole lot better than getting his shoes. Like 8 years in a row. Maybe more than that. That's a confession. But so God is saying, because I am holy, I can put in my voice in this verb, make you holy and make you like me. Not at a force thing, but hey, man, because I am, you can be just like me. It's a different way to look at it. Some would think, as a matter of how long I played with Michael Jordan, I don't think I'd really ever get to his ability. As long as I play with God, I will never get to be like God unless he does something miraculously in me and through me, as hard or as talented or whatever, as hard as work or discipline as I have. It's just not going to happen. But just as he who called you, who separated us out to be his special treat for his use, because he called us together to complete this picture of being holy. And all we do, holy from stuff we shouldn't touch, but also holy to people who are having troubles. Practice being holy, because I am holy, is an invitation to the party as opposed to a stern correction across the head when we screw up. It's simply an invitation. Hey, because I am, for no other reason, come with me and you can be holy. So to close up, I have a couple questions for you. So you've heard my junk and my stories, my high graphics, my little cartoons. Is God prompting you on anything? And throw a lot of my stuff out there. Some you might relate, some that. Is God today prompting you on something that he's inviting you to in the context of your community to work on, not to just make you holy, but to make this place more holy and more complete? Is he prompting you right now? And are you committed to the process? That just because he's prompting you today doesn't mean you'll have it perfected by tomorrow. In fact, it could mean you could be greatly annoyed by the end of the day with the very answer to the prayer, hey, God, make me holy with. What's your next step? Find that we fault in two areas when we apply anything is we either have 15 next steps or we have none, right? And so I'm the kind, I have like 15 next steps, and then by the end of the day, I can't even remember any of them. And so I end up quitting. It's just too impossible. I'm going to change everything in my life because I have to work on one thing. Now, screw it, I don't feel like doing anything, so I don't do anything. I'll get around to it. And at the end of by Wednesday, we don't even know what we're supposed to be doing. So what is your next step? What is one step? What's he prompting you on? You committed to the process. What's your next step? And can you pray the jerk face prayer? I don't know that that's in the classic contemplative tradition. It's very simple. Make me holy. Whatever it takes, God, make me holy. And even in spite of the fact that sometimes even the smartest in the room don't always know what it means in real life, doesn't stop God from answering the prayer. So there's my last slide. So just invite you to spend a couple of moments in quiet, and then we'll have communion. Is that the next thing? Thank you.